Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Wrestle me, Mark.
Wrestle me, Peter.
It's Pete and Mark back for another tilt at WrestleMania 27. We might actually get to a match this time round.
So close. I've got that horrible knee-jerk reaction when you say, we're back. I have that thing of almost going back once again with the Renegade. And I have to pull it in every time.
Oh, sorry, Mark.
And if you listen back, you'll hear me take the intake of breath. When you went back, I went... But once again, can't stop it now.
Let's.
Oh God! Hey, look, we're recording this quite early on in the year.
Yes, okay.
It's we are in early April now, mm-hmm. And so this you guys will be hearing in early May,
you'd say. Yes.
So what you will have missed is both of our birthdays. Now, Pete, you are really, really generous, and you always give me lovely presents through the year, and you always do it. Now, I tried really hard to get you some good stuff, but then lockdown happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, I can't get anything good. But one thing did arrive. So this is a little birthday present for you. Oh. It is very on brand.
Oh, yes. Oh, that is wonderful. That is... Big Shaw and Big Boss Man in their celebration. It's so horrible. One of my favourite scenes in wrestling is Big Boss Man driving his Big Boss police car. He's now a policeman now. Pulling a man in a casket with his son, the son of the dead man, on top of the casket. And by dead man, I mean Big Shaw's son. Big Shaw is on top of a casket. It's a pin. It's a pin badge.
It is a lot to take in.
It's
isn't
a double
it?
Pin badge. It would really work nicely as like a, you know, those little collar pins. You get so you like
it really
you know, on one side of the collar
on
you'd
your
have
tips.
Yeah you'd have Big Boss Man driving his police
it's two separate then, pins attached then, with a chain isn't it that's so what's good. So amazing
we have to take a picture of that it's so funny
it is good the creator is on the back it's really worth if you want one of these
2020 apparel 20 by 20 apparel
yeah,
fantastic
he is a big wrestling man and he delivered that most excellently.
Hey. That's
so
wonderful.
Happy birthday, Pete.
Thank you.
Look, guys, just because Pete's birthday's come and gone, it doesn't mean you can't give him presents. He's happy to receive. Do you know what he likes? Vintage football t-shirts from around the world. That's what he likes.
I like Patreon subscribers.
Yeah, that's true.
We do have a Patreon, patreon.com/wrestleme. If you want to get involved, if you want to hear more from WrestleMania 27, you get the whole thing in one big lump, all the pay-per-view in one big lump, and you get an extra show every single week, and we don't have to talk about all of this modern muck. We can talk about some stuff yeah. that you want to hear. We're, get involved. It's a meritocracy. It's an autocracy. Let us know what you want to be hearing, and we will...
Doing a Great American Bash 1990 this month.
Yes.
And it's a banging podcast. Sorry, that was a Freudian slip. I meant it's a banging event. Because and actually, look, this seems like a really cruel sell if you're not a Patreon subscriber. Because
right.
this WrestleMania is really, really boring and bland. And
we tried to make it not sound boring and bland because we are
look, this podcast,
the masters of the
makes,
wrestling podcast.
It makes diamonds out of dirt. But if you give us diamonds to start with, what do we make? Huge huge diamonds.
Massive diamonds.
With great big sexy curves.
diamonds.
I was really close to, yeah.
Polish round. It's not a pearl, it's a diamond.
We have to lose quite a lot of the original diamond to make them round, actually. So it's really going
very
badly.
Very wasteful.
This is the fabric of Americana. This is the epitome of pop culture. This is the pinnacle of entertainment. This has been written by a fucking English grad who I don't think he's seen a great deal of wrestling before.
No.
That is Michael Cole's opening words to this WrestleMania. It sticks out like a sore fucking thumb. It really does. The epitome of pop culture.
I'd sing it right in a... In like a university, what do you write at the end of the year? I do one.
A dissertation.
Dissertation.
Yeah, and it's that sort of thing where you've gone, unlike everybody else who is looking at the work of Vedekind, I have chosen to cast a critical eye over the epitome of pop culture. Some would say the fabric of Americana, the pinnacle of entertainment, WrestleMania. And you'd still get zero on it.
Get out.
Nice try, doofus. this is a funny WrestleMania insofar as the commentary teams are a bit all over the place.
Yes.
The reason for that is there's a match involving two of them, Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. So you get different people dropping in and out through this. Through most of it, Michael Cole is sitting in a plastic box, which is called the Coal Mine. Where he's erected this to keep Jerry Lawler away from him.
Right, okay.
They have basically started feuding. And this at the time was quite a big angle. People actually were looking forward to seeing Michael Cole get his comeuppance.
Right.
But Michael Cole is during this period playing the heel announcer. And so you just have a lot of squabbling on air, which doesn't make for a particularly enjoyable... It's a funny thing where when you get someone like Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura supports the bad guys, but he's also not continually going, you stupid fat piece of shit, Gorilla, you stupid moron with your great big sausage hands. And in this, I mean, there is a bit where they are calling each other morons. Jerry Lawler, you can tell, gets annoyed a couple of times. There's a bit where he calls him a moron so violently that Michael Cole actually laughs.
I did hear that. You went, ha.
Yeah. But the problem with that is when you have the commentators who are arguing, they are also getting themselves over at the expense of what's going on in the ring.
Yeah.
So they're, if you like, pushing forward their storyline at the expense of what's happening. And I found that a really, again, probably at the time it didn't seem as weird. It's only afterwards when you go, I have no idea what this feud is over.
Yeah, because you're coming to it quite cold. And when Ricardo Rodriguez, and Albert Del Rio and stuff, and Ricardo and Del Rio, when they're kind of out, and obviously one commentator is all in on them, one commentator isn't, and they're just squabbling, and you're like, all right, fine, but can we just get to what we're actually watching here?
It's not enjoyable to listen to. And there's a funny thing here about Michael Cole, who is the man who is there every week. Mm. When it comes to WrestleMania, people don't want him doing their matches. So when they've got Sway, you can knock him off and bring out Jim Ross.
Yeah.
And so Undertaker has always asked for Jim Ross to be commentating his matches, you know, because he adds to the drama. And it's a really noticeable thing after the Cole and Lawler match, they take Michael Cole out, and Jerry Lawler then, having commentated the Lawler and Cole match, is able to stay for the rest of WrestleMania. And the matches that he does are Triple H versus The Undertaker and the main event.
Yeah.
And it's a funny thing where Michael Cole is the man who is there week in, week out, and he's still got to the point where they go, it'd be better if he didn't do the main event. Yeah. So this is a clever way of getting JR back in. Mm. And it really does work. I mean, as soon as you get Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler stopping arguing, and you get Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, who respect each other and are both about the matches, it really, really improves.
Yeah.
The problem is the stuff in the ring, apart from the Undertaker matches, you know, pretty hard to sell. Mm. The line that I really did like, it was just Jerry Lawler is they have Josh Matthews in. And Josh Matthews is there to sort of fill the role of the bland, boring, vanilla bland boy, which he does very well indeed. He is... He just says nothing that is funny or witty. It's just a really blanded out, awful sort of... And this partly was the problem with the commentary at this period. the product wasn't helped by the commentary. Mm. It was very difficult not to listen to it and just go, I can't stand any of this. Matt Stryker, Josh Matthews, and an arguing Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. It's like hell. The bit I did like was Jerry Lawler just goes, yep, Snoop Dogg is in the his house. And Cole, who's not in shot, just goes, oh, that was good. But no one's getting over. So no. I sort of like, I don't like Michael Cole. And then Jerry Lawler's speaking and I go, yeah, Cole's got a point there. Jerry Lawler's really tired and hackneyed. And then Lawler will go, you're shit at this. And Michael Cole will go, you're fucking stupid. And I sit there and just go, I agree with all of this. And I hadn't thought of it before. And you keep,
you've really exposed the product here.
You have. What's the best you could hope for this? That I somehow go, both of these people are brilliant. I think the one who is telling me that the other one is awful is wrong, but I respect his opinion because he's so good that I also think he's right. I don't know. Awful. First match, Pete.
Yeah.
World champion Edge with Christian versus Alberto Del Rio with Brodus Clay. Oh, it's going to take a while to get through, isn't it? This is Edge's last WrestleMania appearance.
Oh, really?
For 9 years.
Wow.
So it very much seemed like this was the last match in his career.
Was this an injury? Was it an injury?
It was, yeah. No one actually knew that there was a problem, not even Edge at this point. But the day after this match, he went for an MRI. So he'd been having some problems with his neck.
And then the MRI, the guy didn't know he was a wrestler. So what have you been doing to yourself? Your brain is mush.
Did you come here via meteorite? But he went to the doctors in Atlanta having... I think he was losing strength in one of his arms.
Right, okay,
That, for wrestlers, is obviously a big red flag. Spiny, you know what that's about.
That's spiny.
He was diagnosed the next day with spinal stenosis, which is where your spinal column begins narrowing, it begins pinching all of the nerves. He just basically, he'd been feeling unwell sometime before WrestleMania. He'd had pins and needles and numbness, and he'd had a bit of dizziness, and they basically said to him, that is it, you're all done.
Yeah.
And so at this WrestleMania, it's his last match. It looked until this year like this was his absolutely career was over. But he didn't know it even when he was doing this match. Right. So not only could they not give him a sort of big retirement thing, he didn't even realise it was coming up.
Right.
It's great in a way that he went out a champion. You know, it's a nice thing to have done. And I think, you know, in retrospect, it looked a bit like, oh, they'd let him go over because they knew that this was, you know, coming up. But I don't think anyone quite knew the severity of it. So it just happened. He went out and retired as champion. And he did a very emotional speech on Raw. It must have been not the next night, but the night after,
right.
The week after, rather. And that became a funny thing. But by the time Edge was doing his retirement thing in ring, that became weirdly almost like a new trope in wrestling, where you would get great matches out of people, they would become champion, they would lose the belt, and then at the end of their career, what they'd get to do was they'd open up Raw in a 20-minute segment where they'd cry and they'd just say, so I gotta tell you, gonna be turning my back on everything, you know. And it became almost like a wrestling trope that was pretty much forming around this time, where Shawn Michaels really, I suppose, did one of the earliest ones with his I've lost my smile, but that turned out to be he was having problems coming to work.
Big as shit.
But then it does become a thing where, you know, you get all these people. I mean, later they would use it very successfully around this time with Mark Henry
and his turn
in his salmon coloured jacket, one of the iconic pieces of wrestling clothing.
I've watched that a few times. Very enjoyable.
But it is funny how it becomes as much a part of wrestling as your chase for the belt, or, you know, the turn on your partner.
Yeah,
you know, you get to do the teary speech. Okay, guys, and this is me, and this is real, and I wish it wasn't. You know, always the way. This is an interesting sort of group of people. So you have Alberto Del Rio, and Alberto Del Rio is. Really, I watched this and I'd forgotten how good he was. Mm. Basically, they've given him Mexican JBL is his gimmick.
I thought, because I wasn't sure why, like, he's got a mansion. Mm. Why is he a bad guy? I thought it was like the subtext that he was a drug lord, and that was why everyone was kind of like, he was, you know, he's a Mexican drug lord, and that's why he's got the car, that's why he's got the mansion. I thought that was the subtext.
This is very much Vince McMahon's thing about going, what would really annoy people?
My gardener being rich.
A Mexican do well. That's 100% it. And he wasn't hated. He was sort of delightful. Yeah. He's like, he is so good. He was around for a long time in WWE. And this is really the early run that he had. He's at his peak.
Right.
And so over the years, he begins to look like a lot of people did in this period if they hung around. They would begin, their love of wrestling would begin to seep out through their fucking faces. And they would look tired and they would start being lethargic. Yeah. And at this point, he has got the world in front of him and he is almost like a can't-miss Mexican megastar.
Right.
He, in real life, is very much like the real sort of character of Alberto Del Rio. So he was born into one of the most famous wrestling Mexican families. His father was the luchador Dos Caras. And his uncle were Mil Mascaras and Psicodélico. So Psicodélico, not as well known, but Mil Mascaras.
I mean, delicate.
For the, I don't know.
Don't hit me.
Psicodélico.
Oh, Psicodélico.
Oh,
right.
I can't pronounce it because I see the sicko and then I've lost it already. But Mil Mascaras was during the 80s and the late 70s the biggest Mexican wrestler, and he was also one of the few Mexican wrestlers who was also very, very big internationally.
Right.
Dos Caras was his brother, and Dos Caras was also a huge headliner. Both of them were masked men. Del Rio, he started off as a legitimate wrestler, so he did Greco-Roman wrestling.
Right.
He was in the Mexican national team. He placed third at the World Junior Championships in 97 in the Czech Republic. He won the Central American and Caribbean Games in his weights division three times. He won medals at the Pan American Games, and he would have competed in the 2000 Summer Olympics in Sydney, but due to a lack of funding and support, Mexico didn't send a wrestling team.
Right.
So he had a legitimate background. He spent then 8 years wrestling in Mexico as Dos Caras Jr. So one of the biggest names. The guys who were the huge names in Mexican wrestling, a lot of them would have sons who would go into the business. Mm. But they wouldn't immediately allow their children to take their names because if their children were terrible, that would reflect badly on them. So he ends up being Dos Caras Jr. because even though Dos Caras is one of the, probably at this point, three, four biggest stars in the country, he can really do this.
Right.
He's masked, and he spends 8 years working in Mexico, pretty much always at the top of the cards. He wins big belts, the CMLL title, which is one of the oldest in Mexico.
Right.
In 2008, the WWE approached him and said, we'd like you to make a surprise appearance in the Royal Rumble and then sign a contract. But he turned them down, saying, you know, he was doing well enough and he didn't feel that at the time they had enough respect for Mexican wrestling culture, of which, of course, you know, he is almost like Prince Harry.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from this royal Mexican family. But in 2009, he did sign a 3-year contract and he said a number of things have been put in place. He was told he didn't have to go to Florida Championship Wrestling, which was the developmental territory. He would be going straight to the main roster. And he was told that he would retain all the rights to his mask, his name and his image. And he would sublet them, if you like, to WWE for promotional purposes.
That's
so
huge.
He had a massive thing. So as soon as the contract was signed, he went to wrestle for Florida Championship Wrestling. Where at a taping, he revealed his new unmasked wrestling character, which was called at the time Alberto Banderas.
Banderas.
Mexican who was not very pleased, the big Mexican wrestling fan contingent, that he just unmasked willingly. Because obviously, you know, I think we've talked about this with some of the Rey Mysterio stuff. It's seen as being a very important part of Mexican wrestling culture.
Mm.
And your mask is one of those things that you can lose in a match. And if you lose it in a match, you never put it back on again.
Mm.
You shouldn't be, like Rey Mysterio did, losing your mask every now and then because WCW don't have any respect for it. But he willingly just went, what the fuck, you know. His career was it was decent. You know, he was a mid-carder. At times he was a main eventer, but you know, they just never quite pulled the trigger on him properly. He was so charismatic in his first run, and he just comes out when you know how tired he will look in the future, it's impossible not to go, oh man. He also took part in MMA.
Right.
Because I think, you know, his legitimate background. He isn't just a, if you like, a wrestler.
Mm.
He is a sort of real sports combat, you know, legitimate bloke. MMA, he had 15 bouts with 9 wins and 6 losses.
Right.
His losses are much more famous than his wins, to be honest. Only one of the men he's beaten has a Wikipedia page. pretty much everyone who's beaten him is slightly a name fighter.
Right.
He fought Mirko Krokop in one of his most famous MMA bouts at Pride's Bushido 1. And Pride were a Japanese MMA group who were notorious. Not notorious, that's not fair. They were very legit. They were famous for quite brutal matches. And Mirko Krokop was a Croatian MMA star. He was called Krokop. He was a Croatian policeman, Krokop. And he was, at the time,
Robocop.
One of the great, like, MMA stars, because he was explosive and he had a head kick. His head kick would knock people the fuck out.
Right.
And he took on Alberto Del Rio, who at the time I think was still called Dos Caras. And he came out for his MMA match wearing a modified wrestling mask. So it wasn't like one that covered everything apart from his eyes. It had great big sections. You could see his face. But he was still paying heritage to his Mexican mask.
Okay, right.
Even in this MMA fight. And he got knocked out very quickly with a high head kick. And
did not protect him?
No, not at all. And it was sort of famous because everyone was like, it's sort of funny because he's got this mask on. But he has it's one of those knockouts. It's not a spectacular knockout. The kick is great.
Yeah.
And he just sort of sits down, like he sort of slumps down, but his face is just totally blank in the way you only get when you've been properly knocked out, you know. And he doesn't sort of go off or anything, he just goes from sit down.
I'm just gonna
His last MMA match was in December 2019 last December, and he lost to Tito Ortiz, who was once, of course, like one of the most guaranteed bankable MMA stars. Not looked that way for many, many years. But, you know, look, hey, Del Rio did a lot better than I would have done. So he is legit. At this point, he has got his bodyguard, Brodus Clay.
Yes. A man who I was drawn to a little while ago because of the Funkasaurus gimmick.
Yes.
And the disco song that comes along with it.
Yep.
Learning a little more about him, I'm less keen on him.
He's a guy called George Murdoch. He worked originally as a bodyguard for Snoop Dogg. And so the name they gave him, Brodus Clay, is a play.
Like someone from Sunderland.
It's a play on Snoop Dogg's real name. So Snoop Dogg, his real name is Calvin Brodus.
Right.
So Snoop Dogg must have been so in with WWE at the time that they're going, we're going to create characters sort of based on your name. Yeah. People from your past are coming in. Why they cut him, who knows? And they had Brodus Clay debut as Alberto Del Rio's bodyguard for his first run. And this is a time when everyone was quite bland. And when he first appeared, Brodus Clay, I was properly fucking excited. And the reason for that was he looked like a frightening monster.
Yeah, because his face is quite frightening, and he's big, and those physiques don't come around hell of a lot. He's tall.
When was the
big
last time they signed someone who was fat?
Yeah.
You know, and it was suddenly just going, that is what a wrestler should look like. He looks like a monster. You know, he looks like something from a bad dream.
Yeah.
Not everyone has to look like Ted DiBiase Jr., because we've seen in the last year or so, when they do, it's impossible to, like, care, because everyone's a cookie-cutter replica of everybody else. Mm. And so Brodus Clay coming in, you were like, great, this guy, you know, he looks just, he looks like a shaved fucking Sasquatch. There's something about him that was he's got very snaggly teeth.
Yes, he looks like he's got an extra set of teeth behind his normal teeth.
Yeah, little
like
baby teeth never came out. So they basically had him as the bodyguard, and then they began saying, right, well, he's going to make his SmackDown debut. And they delayed it from November 2011 to January 2012, where whenever they'd be like, he's going to be on tonight, they'd have John Laurinaitis, who was the general manager of Raw, SmackDown at the time, just say, oh, actually, no, it's going to be next week. You know, we can't do it. We've run out of time. And so there was this big, weird, long, like they wouldn't put him out. They wouldn't put him out. And then finally, they went, okay, it's time. Let's have his debut. And you've seen these vignettes for 4 months of him just looking furious and nasty. And when they finally say, here he comes, you hear the opening bars of the single greatest wrestling theme of all time, Somebody Call My Mama.
And so they launch him into as being a wrestler
yep.
with the Funkasaurus, Somebody Call My Mama.
Yep. And he comes out in a tracksuit with two dancers called the Funkadactyls.
Yes.
They are later the brilliant current wrestler, Naomi, and the less good one, whose name has slipped my mind, which is terrible. Cameron, I think, is her real name. What's she called here? Who knows? This is not the podcast to come to if you're desperate to find out what the Funkadactyls' names are. We've got a huge bit to do about the sexual allegations coming up, so that's the bit I'm really concerned about. And out comes Brodus Clay dressed as the Funkasaurus to somebody like calls Mama.
Like a member of Run DMC. Like he does a little dance. Was he just learning the dance? Is that why he was delayed? He just couldn't get the dance in?
I think it was a weird trolling. I don't quite understand what the thought behind it was.
Oh, it was like he was going to be a monster.
Here comes the monster.
Beast,
Here comes the monster. And people, the thing is, you see, people were genuinely excited.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and he's basically
in a romper suit and he's just dancing around.
It's like a sitcom character.
Yeah.
When they sort of go, oh yeah, you know, I'll host your party, and they go, oh, so listening up to MC, it's a bit like that.
Yeah,
it's like
Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air just turned up and he's wearing a dress.
Exactly.
Ha-ha, I subverted what you expected.
You know there's only one way out of this, Rodney, don't you? Hard crash, Rodney behind the decks. Good. It's that. And he came out, and I do remember this fucking happening. And I remember thinking, you pieces of shit. You know, you had actually finally someone who looked something different.
Yeah.
And you've gone, and now the most important thing is that we squander this. Mm. I will forgive anything that has somebody called my mum, right? Now,
it's an endlessly excellent song.
It's great. I think it's one of the best wrestling themes of all time.
It's just someone pleading to call their mama.
It was originally the music in WCW of Ernest the Cat Miller.
Right.
And you know how little they cared about WCW. They bought the company and its trademarks.
So they bought all of the music as well, right?
Yeah, and they bought all of the music as well.
Oh, so now, it wasn't originally.
They have basically used the music for the occasional WCW stars they would get over,
yeah.
but very few of them, because a lot of the WCW stars were repackaged. But they'd use, you know, I don't know, Goldberg's theme, that sort of thing. Mm. And yet someone went through and they went, do you know what? I know you're not interested in all this, and I know it's just, you know, we don't reuse WCW stuff, but have you heard somebody call my mama? And it's been used a few times. I think it's been used since as well. I think I've heard it
for
a couple of times
else.
Where people have, like, right. Where they've used it almost like background music, where they've gone, so please welcome the recipients of the check that we've given.
It's like library music that was included with iTunes. You'll hear everywhere.
I love it. I was thinking about this because I think someone had asked me on Twitter, just saying, you know, what's your favourite themes? Someone did ask us if we could do a little Patreon episode on some of the albums that WWE released. And I think that is a really fun idea.
Yeah.
I think it's a really good one. But like when it comes to wrestling theme tunes, I've been thinking about this. It's actually been sort of a good way to get through lockdown. I can spend like 2 hours every night thinking what is the best. And all different reasons, but I'd go the Midnight Express theme, which again is a sort of, doesn't sound like a wrestling theme tune. It's really good. I play that. It's like 80s sort of weird synthy instrumental.
Right.
It's got to be Somebody Call My Mama. I think
it's impossible to play it on my radio show as a background music all the time. I love it. Absolutely love it.
It is great. Oh. Brodus Clay doesn't really do anything in his career as a result.
Right.
I think of this, you know, it's impossible not to look back on these decisions and think, you know, are you sort of pleased that you let that go? Are you pleased that by your decisions you squandered this, what could have been sort of interesting?
Well, I watched him in a clip from some some small wrestling company. David Arquette was kicking him out of the ring. Mm. If David Arquette is involved
in
your matches, you know you are at.
He left the WWE in 2014.
Right.
So he's one of those people, again, who has a sort of like 3-4 year career where there's nothing happens.
Yeah.
He ends up in TNA as Tyrus until 2017. And he leaves wrestling, certainly as a daily competitor in a company that's running weekly TV, because he became a contributor on Fox News.
Yeah,
which is bizarre, isn't it? He still uses the name Tyrus, which is, again, TNA are very bad at their trademarks, aren't they? A, Tyrus doesn't mean anything. B, it sounds like too many other things like Cyrus, who was a WWE character, and it sounds like Virus, which, you know, I think is in the today. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily
very
book
much,
someone.
I mean, he's got opinions about it, hasn't he?
Doesn't he just? And then they stick him on fucking Fox News, and he starts as a contributor on the Greg Gutfeld show, And then he becomes, from 2018 to 19, the co-host of the show UnPC on their streaming channel Fox Nation.
He's like a, oh, I can't believe he said that kind of character.
Yeah.
Also, I can't believe I texted that to a girl kind of character as well.
In 2019, UnPC co-host Britt McHenry accused Murdoch, George Murdoch, that's Broder's Clay stroke Tyrus, of sexual harassment after he sent her a series of lewd text messages. Just pull your boobs out now. Why don't you just grin and bear it? Was one. He doesn't do any fucking commas either, the moron. Fucking hate that. He sent to her, I love the fact you're always working. If we ever had sex, I feel like after an orgasm, wait till I tell you how that's spelled, you should say, speaking of feeling good, did you see the story on the puppy rescue? We should do a segment on it. Hand me my phone. Attempt at a joke, but it's introducing sex into it. Steer. And the last one was, keep being negative and I'll send you another dick pic. Don't you dare call my mama, Broders.
Please don't text my mama.
No, according to Fox News, the matter was investigated and resolved.
Yeah, he was given his own show.
He was given a different show, that's right, yeah.
He was given his own show.
And in December 2019, the co-host Britt McHenry filed a sexual harassment suit against Fox News and Murdoch.
He's got a wild sense of humour, if we're being generous, one current former Fox employee said. And that is the man who gets his own show on
Fox News.
Gets
his own
show,
that's what you do. It's annoying to see that of all of the former wrestlers out there in the world, and this is obviously one that, you know, The Rock is on and you see him out in the world, it's annoying that there is still one wrestler who is out there spelling orgasm, O-R-G-A-double-Z-U-M.
Orgasm.
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 It's not a bad wrestling name, is it? Not a bad wrestling name in the mask. Please. El Hecho. Orgasm. Coming out really quickly. before the music's even played.
Diving underneath the ring like that wrestler.
Yeah, like Titus O'Neil. Impregnating the ring. And then coming out having a sleep.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production. We'll be right back.
Fine match, I thought.
Yeah,
fine,
it was good.
Match. Yeah. Del Rio's really, really good in it. Edge is really, really good into it as well. His hair is good. The crowd are good. They're into it. It's just good.
Yeah.
Never quite catches fire. Don't know why, but it's a nice little match. I enjoyed this one. I think it's one of the two best matches at this WrestleMania.
Yes.
Maybe three.
I would say it's there.
There's a little bit at the end where they have the Rolls Royce that Alberto Del Rio's driven in. And Edge, following his win, goes back. And natural thing, you know, you have a sporting competition with someone, like football. Mm. If you beat an opposing team, you would tend to, on your way home, smash up all their cars.
Smash up all their cars, yeah.
Normal thing. Works, yeah. I mean, not criminal act, because you've won the match. So he goes over to the car and he starts sort of doing some elbow drops on like the bonnet. And then he gets on the roof. And I really thought to myself, they have hired that car and they are going to give it back. And they're getting Edge to do stuff that isn't going to
you could probably just panel beat that out.
Yeah,
if someone just stood up in the car, it would pop it back
exactly.
out
exactly. And they take it back, and someone would go, "What's happened to the roof?" And they go, "Let me." Oh, Jesus! I don't know. When did that happen? But I was really like, that is cheap.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it's just Edge builds up, and they suddenly get these two crowbars. Christian gives him a crowbar, and they start on the car, and they start by scratching the crowbar down the side.
I introduce a lot of shows about, you know, the Phantom Works Garage, the Goblin Works Garage.
Yeah.
All of these people, Bernie and Lipu, fixing up these cars and stuff. And I love master craftsman, and I love precision engineering, and I love anything like that, and I love respecting. So even as a non-driver, even as a person who can give a shit about cars, I was still a bit like, I'm sure it's a shell inside. I'm sure everything's
fucked
in that car. I wrote
exactly the fucking same.
When they did
the scratch down the side, I was like, oh, well, at least it can just be, you know, repainted. I suppose it's probably actually sprayed probably 2 years ago. It probably was a wreck.
Yeah.
Like that. And then they start doing the boot. They start smacking the boot in, and I was like, well, that can probably be knocked out.
Yeah,
and then
every
they do the windscreen, and they start doing other fucking windows. And then he's just like pounding on the fucking bonnet,
yeah.
And then smacking the Rolls Royce thing off. And I did I have exactly the same thing. I was like, that is a museum quality car. I have no interest in it. But this seems obscene.
And I don't know why I found this so obscene, but Kendrick Lamar's partner, I don't think like legal sexual partner, but like, friend, I don't know who he was.
Legal sexual partner.
Not Purple-lucky kind of situation who will touch anyone illegally or legally. Kenneth Lamar's friend, I'm sure people are screaming at their radios, however you listen to the podcast. His friend, the Brit, smashed up like a Maserati or one of those kind of modern cars. But for some reason, the Rolls Royce just seems a bit less machine, market. It's a bit of a, like, it was clearly built in the 70s.
We're not going to get it. We're not going to afford it. We're never going to have one.
No.
But there is something about looking at it, you just go, it's a sort of thing of beauty. Would you have done that if he'd have brought, like, a painting down? I've got a minor Van Gogh with me, and you just go, yeah, we're going to fucking put our foot through it. You go, oh, I don't know. And I know you can pay to have it redone, but it's like, and the only thing I could think was that thing that Michael Cole started everything off with. I'm thinking, is this the pinnacle of entertainment? Watching a man to sort of destroy a beautiful object.
I didn't even like watching it on Street Fighter 2, and that car was rubbish.
I used to love that on, what was the game where you could walk along? It was like on the Commodore Amiga.
Right.
You could walk along, and occasionally you could just punch out a car window as you walk by. Lovely. Lovely.
Renegade or something.
That was like a very early Grand Theft Auto. You do in the fighting game, it would give you 30 seconds to beat out a car window. Oh, lovely.
Man.
Christian here does a little touch. And again, it's sort of why Christian is such a good wrestler.
Yeah.
Is that they've done all this damage, gives it a little polish.
Trying
to make it nice.
Tries to polish the scratch out.
Yeah. I think, you know,
enjoyable.
Until very recently, this did look like it was Edge's last match of all time. And I actually think it's impossible not to look back on this and go, whatever your last match is probably not going to be oddly as perfect as this one,
yeah,
where you go out on top. I think I'm not saying it's a mistake for him to come back and, you know, make good money and, you know, perform as well as he can perform. I just think, you know, sometimes you might look back and go, I should have left it there, because can't really top that in some ways.
No.
I thought this was a lovely little match. Let's crack on.
Yeah.
Let's crack straight on. And I think, you know, what you've got here is you've got the second good match in a row that might begin to make you think that it's WrestleMania.
It's going
to
be good.
Yeah, because if you watch these after we talk about them or as we talk about them, you'd be like,
actually, guys, I really enjoyed the past couple. You know, it can't be all bad and everything. This seems like a long, long time ago since we saw these matches, and I only watched it last night.
Yeah.
This is Cody Rhodes versus Rey Mysterio. What culture had this match as the best match of this WrestleMania in their big rundown of the best match at every WrestleMania?
Okay, right, yeah.
They were like, when it comes to WrestleMania 27, this is the best match.
Yeah. Is that looking through the lens of what Cody Rhodes has become?
No, I don't think so particularly. Right. I think there is a thing if you're doing a list like that where you don't want to continually give The Undertaker the match of the night. Yeah. That makes for a boring list.
Well, also, I think people watching The Undertaker match, I think, would probably say, well, I've seen a lot of him in the main show.
I've seen him do better.
Yeah.
You know? This is, I think, one of Rey Mysterio's best WrestleMania matches. He had the one, obviously, at WrestleMania, would have been, what, 21, 22? Mm. Where he, no, 22, where he wins the world belt in memory of Eddie Guerrero. That was a huge match, but it was very short, triple threat, and it was about 7 minutes. And this match is a much better representation of Rey Mysterio's career in some ways, that you get to see him having a good match where he just never gives up, there's great determination, and it's a really enjoyable match to watch. It's a really good back and forth. I had totally forgotten how good Cody Rhodes was at this point. Just this period, I suppose, you know, you're beginning to think that everything is bland because there's so much blandness around it. And watching this, I was shocked. I had no idea he was this good in WWE. Mm. I always think of it sort of like, oh, he leaves WWE, he does the independents, he's really got a fire, and he becomes, you know, the guy he is today, which is the legitimate second competition to Vince McMahon. You wouldn't watch this match and think that is the guy who is going to, you know, become the if you like, not the enemy of WWE, but certainly the only viable competition to it. You wouldn't necessarily have watched this match and thought anything other than, you know, another one of these guys. But watching it back with that sort of knowledge, I suppose, I was amazed by how good he was. I'd totally forgotten he was good at this point.
Right.
You know, and he's really, really good. I really enjoyed this match. And Ray comes out dressed as Captain America.
Yeah. Have you got a list of films that you could dress as?
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
Well, I have. But
yay!
He could have come out as Harry Potter in his Deathly Hallows.
That would have been great.
He could have come out as Thor. Because this is the first generation of the Marvel kind of films. The Tree of Life. Do you remember that film? I went to the cinema to see. That was awful. It was very strange. Or Rango. I would have liked to have seen him come out dressed as Rango. Or George Smiley from Tinker Tailor.
That would
big,
have been.
Big thick glasses.
Fucking really heavy wool coat.
Rubbing his glasses with the fat end of his tie.
A load of nicotine on his fingers. That would be good. I do have a problem with Captain America.
Right.
And the reason for that is because I think that Captain America is very pro-America.
Yes,
right?
Okay.
That's not a problem in itself.
Right.
But I think it would be at the detriment. And I think Captain America would help out the worst American over the best non-American.
Yeah, he would be definitely helping out militias and death squads in Venezuela
or
Cuba.
I think if it came down to it and there was a terrorist, let's say for the sake of like it being comic booky, they're from Romania or Transylvania, and they are about to shoot you or the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez, Captain America's duty is to say...
Richard Ramirez.
Ramirez must be saved, because he is, even though he may be the worst American, he is better than the best non-American. So I've got very annoyed in this match. couldn't really concentrate.
About the non-American Rey Mysterio.
Ray's also got a really disgusting little black beard that he's got a tie around which is almost like a hangover from his Avatar costume from last year. And I was like, I'll get rid of that, you horrible man. You look like some fucking sleazy barman, you naughty boy. I was really pleasantly surprised by this match.
Fun mask. Fun mask. Everyone's got a mask on.
They do.
Cody Rhodes has broken his face.
Yeah.
They say, oh, beautiful Cody Rhodes has broken his face.
The funny thing about that is he had a fucking stinky gimmick, which is Dashing Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
And again, it's not like Ravishing Rick Rude, where he is like, you know, he doesn't care what you think. If you call Cody Rhodes dashing, you're asking people to just go, not dashing. fucking prick.
Yeah.
You know? And so...
And also, his whole shtick being called a Rhodes, we remember what his dad looks like. Yeah. What did dad have to fuck to make that? Because he's good looking.
I believe it was a Care Bear. the perfect combination. But, I mean, geez, I mean, he's given nothing with his gimmicks. And you can see, because, Pete, we've said it before, we've said it again, you cannot keep a Rhodes down.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes is wearing black trunks and black boots. Mm. They have given him nothing to work with. They've given him this fucking gimmick of dashing Cody Rhodes. Mm. He at least is doing a, let's break my face. You know, this used to happen quite a lot with wrestlers who thought they were pretty.
Right.
They'd always get their face hurt and they'd come back with a mask that was loaded. But he does this sort of Phantom of the Opera mask thing. And in the ring, he sells it really well. Mm. I think, you know, you can see that they're giving him nothing. And they will continue to give him nothing throughout his WWE career. Yeah. And he will make the best of it. Mm. And against all of the odds, he will get more over than he should. And as a result, they will punish him. it's the circle of life.
I'd really like them to get that mask that Cody Rhodes had and just jam it in a Hugo Savinovich's face and see if it would conform to a handsome man's face.
And when it popped off Hugo's fat face, whether the fat would hold in place.
Yeah.
Like a beautiful sort of like model. Oh, that'd be amazing. There's a little bit like Cody does a standing superplex where he just holds Rey Mysterio. People obviously love working with Rey Mysterio because he is
super light.
The smallest person you work with. And unlike Hornswoggle, you know, he's sort of like, Hornswoggle is presumably lighter on the scales, but he's more difficult to manipulate.
Yeah,
Rey, sort of, you can balance the weight out.
Yeah, he's on a hinge. Yeah. I guess Hornswoggle is like
lifting the block. You can pivot that motherfucker.
Yeah.
You try pivoting Hornswoggle, you will know about it.
His centre of gravity's all off, Hornswoggle.
So low.
That's how the doctor described it.
I wonder if he's harder to pick up than a normal-sized person of the same weight. He must be.
It's like a vase.
But yeah.
Compared to
one of those lead weights you get on like fancy scales in old shops.
Where did they all go, those scales? They must have gone. You don't see them in chemists anymore.
You get them, Pete?
They go to junk shops and they just nobody buys them.
You
they're
get
ridiculous.
Them in middle class people's houses.
Right,
they will
right.
have them on a bureau.
Oh, yes.
I believe, and I don't know this to be the case, but I believe it's easier to lift up Vader than it would be Hornswoggle.
that's something I believe is true.
But. Jesus Christ, they work so well together. Rey Mysterio, he has a sort of bad track record at the big events in WWF. In WCW, they'd stick him on a pay-per-view. He'd steal the show every single time.
Right.
And somehow, WWE, when they put him on a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam, I don't know, it just never quite clicks. I think there was always the pressure that going, he was going to have the best match all the time.
Right.
For some reason, it just always went off the boil. Mm. But this is a match that really no one talks about, that is really, really good. The two work really, really well together. The crowd are so behind it that they are chanting Cody, but they're also cheering for Rey Mysterio.
Mm.
There's a bit right near the end where Cody jumps off the turnbuckle, or vice versa. Rey jumps off the turnbuckle, and he obviously wanted to jump into Cody putting a foot up to sort of knock him out. And Cody keeps his legs down, so Rey just jumps off, just sort of grabs him by the feet on the jump. And you can see there's a moment where they're like, what? Like
that. We do.
And Cody pushes him off. But the crowd are so into it, they don't sort of start going, you fucked up. They
right.
don't sort of go, like that. They just sort of cut them some slack. Both of these guys are really likable in this match. And it's a funny thing we don't talk about very much in wrestling, which is whether a crowd just warms to you.
Yeah.
And I think both of these guys, I think for Cody, certainly, the knowledge that he was Dusty Rhodes' son, people were sort of warmer to him than if you like he'd have just been a guy who was playing a bad guy. I think people would have booed him out. But people almost could sense the, I don't know, like the potential in him.
Yeah.
And it's a potential that he's realised so much more astonishingly
than you could ever imagine looking at this.
He is Dusty Rhodes' son, and what's incredible is that he's, you know, now working at the level that Dusty Rhodes was doing behind the scenes, you know, at a level that Dusty Rhodes really did. It's hard to say whether
he did it in a bigger corporation.
In a bigger corporation, but of course it wasn't his federation. He wasn't the man who motivated it to start, and that's what Cody has done.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I mean,
you would argue that he has, in a broader sense in wrestling, achieved more functionally than Cody Rhodes, than Dusty Rhodes.
Hugely. And I think, you know, he's done it at a time when it's never been more lucrative, but also, you know, yeah, exactly. You know, the amount of money that you can lose doing this potentially is so much more than when Dusty Rhodes was sitting there in Florida going, you know, let's get Pak Thong back, daddy.
I've never seen anyone counter that, you know, that mysterious spin on the ropes where he runs out and, yeah, and spins his legs
the
around.
The 619.
Yeah, and Rhodes grabs on his leg. I'm like, aha! Oh, that was anyone could have done that at any point.
Once you start doing that about blocking moves, is that thing, there was a little bit we were watching in WCW where someone's thrown into the ring. It's a mean Mark Calloway match, and I think Johnny Ace throws him into the ropes, and Johnny Ace does a drop kick.
Yeah,
but Mark Calloway comes off the ropes and he just goes, take a step to the left. Guys, be careful about breaking those things about what is and isn't possible, because I mean, if you're going to catch every move,
it's like he didn't really punch me. Yeah. He slapped his leg and that's why it made the sound.
Yeah, that looks good, but actually it didn't hurt me. Rey Mysterio also takes Cody's finisher really well. I like the fact that Cody has been using now the same finisher for, what is it, 19 years?
Yeah.
No, 9 years. 9 years. He's been using the same finisher, the Crossroads, which is sort of, at the time when you first started seeing it, you see it now, people take it brilliantly. They really land on their head and they really bounce off and it looks fucking devastating. And this is one of the first times you see Rey Mysterio is actually bothered to say, and what is the best way I should take this?
Yeah.
Because Cody does it and Rey knows what he's doing and it looks neat and it looks efficient. And
yeah.
It's a nice little match. It's I honestly, if you'd have asked me 100 times who was the winner of this match, and this match I had no recollection of taking place. If someone said to me, Cody versus Rey Mysterio, you'd been like, oh, yeah, but not WrestleMania. No, you're totally wrong.
Didn't happen.
If you'd have asked me 100 times who won, you'd go, well, obviously Rey Mysterio. And it was nice to see Cody get this one. I think it's, you know, he's like a lot of those second generation stars. I think, you know, they have to fight quite hard to get out of that, you know, that low level. They get the opportunities, but then it's difficult for them to progress.
Mm.
And I think something like this, just to be able to say you had a win at WrestleMania, even, I mean, the worst thing is you'd say I had a win at WrestleMania and someone would say, oh, what number? And you'd go, yeah, 27. And they go, let's talk about how much that card stinks.
The card didn't necessarily stink. It was just the way it was done was stinky.
It was.
Stinky,
it was.
Stinky.
well, it's a pleasure to meet you too. look, I cannot wait till next week because we're going to be on match fucking 3.
Yes.
Well done, us.
If you can't wait, you goddamn bastard. head on over to Patreon. Support us on Patreon and you get an extra show, not necessarily about WrestleMania. You get an extra show a week. You get a newsletter. You get ad-free WrestleMe's as well, so you don't need me telling you to join the army or, you know, subscribe to things and that. But you also get the entirety of this pay-per-view. So if you want to know what happens next, head on over to patreon.com/WrestleMe. It's as simple and as unalloyed as that. That's the gimmick. Patreon.com/WrestleMe. That's our 2x4. That's our whore. That's our USA. Just head on over there and we'll sort you out all nice.
I'm going to get a t-shirt that says, that's our hoe. WrestleMe Pete.
I'm the pimp master. WrestleMe Mark.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.